All right, and welcome to the Off Track Racing Show presented by BikeMag.com. We're coming at you guys from Whistler, BC, and much like just the last round we had in Norway, the weather has changed here. We went from beautiful sunshine the last week and a half, and as I'm looking out the window right now, the rain's coming down sideways. I can barely see the mountains on the other side of the little valley here where I call the studio for Off Track, which is my apartment. So weather's changed, fall is in the air, not officially till this coming weekend, but I think the old clock's ticking, which only means one thing. We're winding down this race season here, the UCI Downhill World Cup. All six rounds. We got five rounds in the bag. Round five just happening this past weekend in Norway. One more to go this weekend in Leogang. Such an amazing race we had there, though, in Norway. Lots to talk about this evening. It's just myself in studio today, and Seb is interbiking it. I think he's on that place, on the plane down to the place where they force you to drink alcohol, stay up to all hours of the night, and look at some usually amazing product and some products where it scratches your head and wonder what is going on within the bike industry. So just myself today, but we've got an action-packed show lined up for you guys. As always, we are going to be checking in with our man on the ground. That is Sven Martin. He's going to be giving us the scoop of what was really happening there in Norway. He's finally dried out a little bit after spending a full day in the rain. And of course, our show guest this week, we've been kind of going back and forth a little bit with him to get him on. We were trying to get him on earlier this year, and things weren't just lining up with time zones. And then unfortunately, he had a little spill at Crankworx. We've got Norco rider Bryn Atkinson. He'll be joining us later on this evening. So lots to talk about with him in terms of his recovery and how he's doing and what can we can expect in the future from him. Very powerhouse rider. It's a shame we're not seeing him at each and every round here currently just due to that spill he had. So just for all you listeners, make sure you stay up to date with the show. Of course, you want to know who's going to be on the show, you got to follow us on Twitter. Hit us up, off_trackmtb. Like I said, we'll be usually a few days before each time we're going to tape, we'll tell you who's going to be on the show. You got a question for these guys, hit them up. This is your one chance. They'll answer it. They'll give you a big, long explanation. And, you know, rather than some fan mail or anything like that, we'll get to the bottom of it. So if you got a question for guys, hit us up, follow us on Twitter. Also, that's where we'll be posting when each and every show is available. Also, alternatively, you can hit us up on our email account, offtrackshow@gmail.com. And of course, the one last other way to follow everything, it's from our man Sven Martin. Hit us up on Instagram. Of course, Sven is running the off-track Instagram account there for Bike Mag at each and every round, giving you some behind-the-scene pictures and scoops of what's going on. So off_track. And I think without further ado, let's just jump in right now with our man. All right, and joining us online right now, he is in Oslo, Norway, coming from the bike park yesterday. We've got Sven Martin. Sven, all the action took place, dry, dusty conditions, of course, changing for that come race day there, nothing but rain. And we're just chatting beforehand. You're just telling me that it pretty much feels like winter over there. Quite the race that unfolded yesterday.
Yeah, they had like 3 weeks of 18 to 25 degree weather, which for Norway, that's hot and summery. And then that's pretty much what we had the first 3 days. It was almost like practice and qualifying was one race. And then the actual race, literally Sunday morning, is the first time guys got to ride in the wet, which meant two runs for most. The odd person squeezed in three runs before race day. So, you know, when you go into completely different tires, lines, and suspension settings, it's not a matter of just banging out three runs. You pretty much have to go make those adjustments, maybe switch wheels or tires or, you know, suspension. So it's not as simple as getting used to the conditions. You have to change your bike too. So that's how come some guys got two and some guys got three. And there's even the odd guy that maybe flattered and only got one run in, you know. So, yeah, pretty much people knew what to expect, but, you know, you didn't know how hard you could push, and they had to pretty much figure that out in two runs, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's I guess the good thing is that at least the conditions were, or at least online, it appeared that they were pretty even for everybody. Obviously, I know the wind was picking up more for others and the rain a little bit, but in terms of track surface, was it a fair playing field throughout the entire event, or was... Did some guys get a short straw there and a little muckier than others?
You know, maybe the juniors had a little bit of a faster track. And maybe by the end of it all, there was a little bit more moisture all over, which maybe slowed it a little bit. But there was never really a good or bad time to go, because it came in, you know, it was steady drizzle rain, and it came in kind of squalls with some wind. So, you know, even Andrew, who went relatively early, he had one of the biggest downpours during his run, which really affects visibility and goggles and then other guys might have not had rain, but they might have had wind or just like a slower, more saturated track. So I think pretty fair for everyone. And some guys just, you know, there's a couple of guys that, you know, McKenna got caught a bit of a gust on the big step down, which pushed him offline and got his center of balance off and blew off the back of the berm. And other guys, you know, chose not to even jump that. Yeah. I think Simmons didn't even jump it, and he was one of the guys that was gapping that big thing the easiest, because he somehow carries really good rolling speed. So yeah, wind, rain, visibility, it was all, you know, and then the actual track. I mean, the rocks were the issue. There's a lot of steep technical rock garden, quite long, quite steep, and then flat, awkward exits between trees. You know, rocks embedded in North Camber, which just kind of, you know, it just throws you off your line of hair, and then you're kind of stuck dealing with not just rocks, but the trees and the off cambers, which is pretty much what happened to G, you know. And then there were enough routes where that became an issue. The one steep, tricky right-hander that quite a few of the girls and a lot of the guys fell on before the speed trap, the grass rocky section.
Yeah, that, you know, thing that looked deadly.
Yeah. And the entry into that was, you know, was tricky. You had to set up wide and go slower than you wanted. But then there was this massive root the size of a leg that you would just usually just cruise over in the dry and then into the berm. But in the wet, you know, there wasn't a way to jump it, or, you know, it was, yeah. So, I mean, some of the guys look comical, but really, you know, in real life, that was, yeah. Track was hard enough without the weather, so it really became a test, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, I mean, chatting about that one section, I know a lot of the girls, some of the girls were pulling some interesting shapes down there. Some of them, that was as far as they got. We'll have Brynn Atkinson later on in the show, but I know Jill Kittner, I mean, that's as far as she made it. She just kind of, you know, everybody was slowing up and stalling in there and just tore her derailleur off. But very demanding track for the women, and taking a lot out of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, the women and all the women. I mean, the first four or five were quite a bit quicker than the rest. But yeah, I mean, there were some big jumps right out the start, and you know, no one was really using the go around at all. And you know, tracks like this just raise the level of you know, of skills, commitment, talent, and racing. And it's good to see, you know, even the women finishing in the teens and 20s riding in the full track just like the men, you know, maybe just not hitting the big step down. Well, you know, none of them hitting the big step down, but other than that, just riding the track just like anybody else. So yeah, it's good to see tracks like that. And it goes for the same for the way they designed the cross country track. You know, they had the most complaints any race organizers received about the track, and it was about the degree of difficulty. Yeah, that by the end of the weekend, the same team managers and federations were actually coming to the organizer. I spoke to Snorre Pedersen today, and he said those same people that were complaining the loudest were actually thanking him for putting on such a good track and kind of shaping or changing a little bit of the racing and what can be raced and pushing the sport a bit further.
Yeah, the videos, I saw a few Instagram videos there of the ex-Seagate riders practicing. I know Wynn Masters loves going out and cheering them on and them having some difficulty with the jumps, but cool to see, yeah, maybe the sport getting pushed a little bit and trying to get out of its rut and forcing some change in the future.
Yeah, I mean, the bikes have evolved, and cross-country race bikes probably the least evolved, you know, except for being built to be light and fast and obviously the first on the bigger wheels. But you know, there comes a point where a rider shouldn't be like, this jump or drop's too difficult. They should be like, you know what, I'm going to have a 200 gram penalty or whatever it might be, and I'm going to put a dropper post on because I'll be faster because there's four sections of the track where I could make passes. And, you know, maybe they need to start thinking about doing that. Certainly they could have or should have done that for the XCE with the had some rhythm sections. But, you know, yeah, if a track's difficult because you've got a massively long C post, you know, to hit rhythm sections at speed, then maybe they should think about the option for running a light dropper post, you know. And hats off to some of those guys like Nino Schroeder and a couple of others that can hit up all those doubles and rhythm sections with, you know, full low stem, long stem, and high C post. So at the end of the day, you know, the riding skill is what gets people through to the podium as well, even in cross country.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it's a kind of precursor that in Norway that it's Worlds next year. So it was, I think it's setting up to be a pretty amazing event with the track, with both obviously with XC and, you know, more specifically with the downhill. I think it's going to provide some very competitive racing and just looking actually at the female times right now, you know, Rachel Atherton, you know, again winning, but from second to fifth, the girls are actually quite a bit tighter, only kind of a couple seconds between them, which is, I think, some awesome to see that level of racing, even in that very technical conditions, the girls pushing one another, and it's the bar is getting raised more and more, which is exciting to watch. You know, it's making for very entertaining racing, and you can tell that they're moving quick on the screen there.
No, exactly. What was it? Second through fifth is like a second and a half difference for the girls. But, you know, Rago, who crashed, probably would have been on this track the one that would have pushed Rachel the furthest. You know, she was nine back with a, you know, pretty solid long crash. And Rachel, you know, got luck. I wouldn't say got lucky, but she was strong enough to avoid a couple of near crashes. So, yeah, you know, even though she won by 7.5 seconds this year, it's not by no means going to be a walk in the park, you know, next year at World Champs.
No, not at all. I think especially seeing like Manon, she's growing, she's getting stronger, she's getting more confidence, and it's definitely good fuel for the off season. You know, and one more round to go this weekend, but I'm sure she'll be pretty keen to get in the gym and start trying to make those improvements for next season to try and catch Rachel and try and get her off the top step of the box.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, she's the one that's within 2 years has had probably the most improvement. But you know, then looking at the women's racing, it really is only Rachel and Manon who are full-time professional athletes. All the other girls are at university or already finished university and working, so or working and racing and just taking the 4 months off for racing. But you know, and that shows Manon's gone from being a fast junior to being, you know, like second and third in the world. So yeah. And that, you know, you at the level that Rachel's raised it to and she's training and racing, preparing just like the top men, and you pretty much need you to be a full-time committed professional athlete, and the strength and training and conditioning and the time just to be on your bike. You know, the other girls have got winter or university and they just can't, you know, they can't travel to Spain or Southern Hemisphere for test camps and training, and they squeezing in gym around the books on short daylight hours. So yeah,
Would more money into the sport for female riding, was that something that would help it, you know, because then it would help alleviate these girls from having to work and having to go to school, where there could be more professionals? Like, is it really coming down to a case of teams don't have enough money to pay a rider enough to focus 100%, and that's why we're seeing a gap?
Yeah, partly, but also, you know, cultures like France, where cycling is very respected, these are highly evolved societies where there's a huge focus on like social security and paying your taxes and being a contributing member of society. So it's not just employed athlete for 5-10 years. The whole culture of life is you go to university, you get a degree, and you go work till you retire. So bike racing is kind of falls outside that norm, but you got bigger teams like Le Pierre, which, you know, have invested more money into the sport and as such have Emmeline riding for them this year. But yeah, you know, maybe the women need a alternative branding and alternative sponsorship to get that kind of money, you know, so you can market them in unique ways, you know, like Missy and those women, they received really good money, you know, alongside of the men back in those glory days. Yeah. You know, the racing's big and healthy, but I don't think we should expect, you know, the mountain bike industry to be solely supportive of funding women's racing when there's other potential, you know, I think, for, you know, for like in women's surfing, the big sponsors aren't necessarily the surf brands. They're the other ones that can represent, you know, women's healthy living and lifestyle. So hopefully, you know, that's where I'd be looking for the money if I was a woman or women's manager or had a team or, you know, and hopefully we can get there as downhill and mountain biking in general is pushed more into the, maybe not the mainstream, but more visibility and attention, you know, through Red Bull Media and other avenues.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. You can't, there's only so much money within the sport of mountain biking. And if everybody's trying to get their hand in the pot to take the same, you know, to get the money, there's only so much to go around. And yeah, and investing, trying to find those outside sponsors, to come into the sport, that's only going to help the sport grow. And that's, you know, that's where it needs to go is trying to find these, other sponsors we see it in motocross and lots of other big ones out there. And like you said, female surfing, it's not the surf brands that are really push, you know, they're pushing it, but, it's all the healthy living and everything else that goes along with it. So,
yeah. When it comes to selling downhill bikes and products, you know, it's hard. You can't argue the fact that watching men's racing, you know, that's why they're getting paid more, you know, there's higher level of competition and that kind of all trickles down. But even within the men, you know, you have, you know, a good few guys making a career that will set them up for the rest of their lives, but everyone else is, you know, making a living and blue collaring or making have a job for 5 years and then they're gonna have to get, you know, a real job. So,
well, we keep seeing Justin Leov, he, you know, retired
small on the inside, you know, tapers off pretty quick the numbers of salaries, but you know, right now there's a whole lot of people earning those salaries with the level of racing and, you know.
Well, yeah, let's jump into our guy.
Hello?
We got you back here. We're little fade out there.
I think it's these hotels, they just cut this Wi-Fi signal every now and then so people aren't doing, I don't know what people do on the internet, but that's probably what it's about.
Uploading ridiculously large mountain bike photo files.
yeah, that could be possibly. I've got like three different. I've got a 60 meg upload, which is probably the fastest I've had all year outside of Andorra. So I've got things whizzing out in the background while we're chatting here.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Well, let's jump into our guys racing. For me, I couldn't believe what was going on. A bit of a, you know, storybook of what's happening here in terms of, I'm not going to lie, I'm biased. I'm a Canadian, and Steve Smith remaining undefeated in Norway, and he's kind of creeping up in the points here to the point now where he's only 17 points back with one round to go on G, where anything can happen this weekend. It kind of seems like whoever wins the race is going to realistically at the end of the day win the series regardless of qualifying for the most part. So
yeah, I mean, well, you know, Steve was definitely defeated in qualifying, because right now at this time of the year that's almost as important a race as the main race.
Yep.
You know, those points having those having Loic and McKenna in between Greg and Steve, that helped G a little bit, and that probably was enough of a difference why Steve isn't sitting in the lead right now. So
yeah.
Same thing for next weekend. It's qualifying points will be important, but it's looking, you know, if they're both having good runs, it looks like pretty much whoever finishes ahead of the other rider will wrap up the overall. And both seem pretty confident going into it. Neither is like, oh man, I wish I did it here or did it there. They both know what needs to get done, and they both, you know, both looking forward to it. It seems like it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're at the races, and you know, talking to Stevie during Crankworks and everything, confidence is just something he has so much of right now. You being at the races, obviously, I haven't spoken to G. How's G doing with you know, Worlds didn't go his way, and then you know now you know he got cut out by the rocks there at in Norway. Is he faltering a little bit, or is it the defense up where he's like, he knows what he needs to do and he's just going to go about it this weekend?
No, he's not worried at all. He's happy with his riding and how the bike's riding. It's the first race I've been to in a long time where you could ask any photographer, video guy, spectator at any day from day one of practice to Sunday morning in the rain practice. You know, everyone's in different sections and different parts of the track, and it really is the first time where I've come across where, without fail, everyone said, you know, we all saw who was fastest, who looked faster there. You know, everyone wants to know before the race, before we put down our money and our bets. But pretty much for the first time, everyone was saying, "G, look fastest." You know, it didn't matter if it was Steve Smith fans or, yeah, or it, that was just that's he just looked quickest everywhere. So I don't think G's worried. He knows how his riding is right now. You know, Leo Gang's it's not the ideal track for things to go down to the wire, because it's going to be real close racing, and literally one pedal slip could cost somebody the World Cup overall. You know, I'd rather see the World Cup overall decided on like a big decisive run on a challenging track. You know, I think it's going to be challenging. The riders and Leo Gang is going to be the speeds and the weather. It's going to be pretty one line bike park style track, but the weather will hopefully make it, you know, more interesting, but it'll also make it less predictable, you know, which doesn't make it less fair, but it's not necessarily the best test of skill that will end up deciding the winner at Leo Gang, you know. Yeah. But it's been tight racing all year, and there's been plenty of tests of that. But Norway was, it was good racing, and good to see Danny and Andrew back up in there, and Blenkinsop back on the podium, and you know, those three have, it's been a little while since they've had good finishes for the three of those guys.
Yeah, well, I was almost thinking after qualifying that you know, Blenkinsop could be he could have won the race, and we would have had the debate would have started of in terms of, okay, guys won on 650B wheels, what do we talk about now? So, but you know, great to see. Yeah, Danny and Andrew definitely, I don't want to say they've been struggling this year, but the expectations that they put upon themselves, they just haven't been getting there. So awesome to see Danny come down and be stoked with his run and content with it and getting a second place. I mean, hopefully that's a start of something good going into this weekend as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you how good the riders like G, Steve, and Greg are, where they seem to never have a hiccup and are always on the podium. You know, so seeing level riders, like you said, like Danny, being happy to be back on there, it, you know, you take it for granted that it's a simple, you know, if someone's riding good and training well, that they're going to finish well. But to get the consistency that G, Greg, and Steve have, those three, they kind of on another level right now, I'd say, but you know, at least for a consistency side of things, you know. But then seeing guys like Rooney being this high up and Troy being this high up, being such new elite riders, you know, it's you know, there's still lots of fighting for the podium, you know.
Even Matt Simmons in eighth, you know, like backing up what he did at Worlds in a completely different track, you know, wet, muddy, and getting a top 10, and same with Bernard Kerr. I mean, it's the kids are creeping in there, and it's exciting. Nico in 11th, Troy in 10th, so they're
Bernard and one or two other guys got there about a week early. They have this ferry book from the UK where you going as commercial goods, so it's not a passenger ferry, and they actually call you when there's a slot available. So they got a call from the ferry company a week early, and that was the slot, and they got to Norway and pretty much nothing else to do, and it's a bike park and it's open. So I think Bernard said he had 17 or 19 runs on the track before practice opened. But then, you know, you have the flip side of that. You know, he placed well, his best result, which is awesome. But when you override a track, you end up start making mistakes, and he had a couple of big crashes, and he almost took himself out of the race before it even started, just because he's already up to speed. And you know, I think as Rachel said, you only have so many race pace type runs you can do. You know,
yeah.
She looked slow on race morning, and I thought, and you know, Rago and Manon looked really quick, and I was like, oh wow, you know, they've just closed the gap, and this is going to be close racing. But she said, you know, under those conditions, she only had one fast run in her, and she didn't want to have a scary moment, didn't want to, you know, crash or hit a tree or because that would have just made her race slower. So she figures, you know, she can ride out any hairy moments in a final, but she doesn't want to get spooked in practice. So it's, it's pretty interesting looking at those two different perspectives of training a lot or training a little or training safely, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And one person I hope he's okay. How is Lorenzo doing? Because all I saw was that kind of horrific video of him jumping the big step down, and then there was one, not one bike, there was two bikes. Is he in one piece?
Yeah, he's in one piece. I think he's more upset with himself. I haven't spoken to him personally, but I've seen he's okay. But I think he's a little bit more upset with himself because, you know, there's a bit more to what you see on Facebook or Instagram. I think they had and the Athertons had some, you know, light edition Worlds frames. The Athertons, you know, this is all pre-production stuff. And the Athertons switched back to their sort of standard bikes. And Lorenzo's bike got somewhat damaged in shipping back from, or air freight back from South Africa.
Yeah.
And they noticed like a ding, and they were wondering if it's a paint flake or a crack. And this is a couple of days, this is I think on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
And they had a close look at it, and they sanded it down to see, you know, what it is. And there was a hairline crack, you know, whether that was from shipping or from riding in South Africa on those big jumps. But, you know, he elected to carry on riding, which really, you know, when there's anything on any kind of track, and especially this one where there's that massive step down, whether you land it clean, if you looked at some of the you know, these GI galleries, whether you land it clean or not, it's putting some massive strain on a bike. So, like I said, I don't know the details. It's all hearsay at this stage, but I think he had the opportunity to switch frames, and he thought he could give it another day, and we see what happened there. And you know, there was a couple of other bikes that were switched out and new bikes built throughout the weekend from a few different teams and riders. So, you know, the racing end of the sport has got like so obsessed with having these bikes, you know, under 36 pounds, under 35 pounds. And, you know, at some stage, I guess the manufacturers have to ask themselves, you know, like, when is too little? Not that I'm relating this one with Lorenzo, but it's that kind of related thing, you know, for safety's sake, what is the safest weight limit for a carbon made frame or an alloy made frame? You know, is there a number that everyone can agree upon, or is that also not, is that stifling development, you know? So
you just have to start swapping it out. You know, you almost take that Formula One mentality, you get X amount of runs on a bike and then that's it, you just, you know, build up a fresh one.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're gambling. So I was just curious if it was A-okay or not, because that's a massive jump to have something go wrong on to that degree too. So
yeah, I think he's like, there was no, he's got like cut lip and but that's no serious from what I know. So you never really know until next weekend, you know. No one really knew where Aaron Gwynn was until, you know, no one quite knows if he'll be in Leogang yet either. So you know, people don't really talk too much about the injuries. They try, you know, keep them quiet, whether it's for sponsors or for competition reasons or just personal reasons, you know. So I guess we'll know in a couple of days, and first day in Leogang.
Yeah, hopefully we see him back out there, and he's putting in a charge and everything. So, and then I guess one other thing, because I know it's almost dinner time for you there. I wanted to touch on probably the most important race of the year, the staff media UCI downhill race, dual slalom that you guys had. Anybody who's follows on the internet better be checking out the gallery on Vital MTV there, because pretty unique race. And maybe I'll let you tell the story, but how did things unfold there? It seems like maybe Nigel's practicing a little bit, kind of the British mentality, same like Cy Patton does with the pump track challenge in Whistler. Maybe Nigel's been getting his turns in, knowing that this race was coming up.
No, Nigel's he's just got skills from all the time, and with slalom you need a little bit of luck now and then, and the best thing about it is the race organizers, they're just good guys that want to put on a fun event. And last year they asked Chris and I, what should we do? So we organized the staff downhill race, and this year we decided to do dual slalom race just to keep it, switch it up. So and there was a huge turnout now, and it was just quick push-ups, and the funnest part was just, sessioning and practicing, and we literally just drilled the poles into the ground and roughly laid out a kind of an even matching course over some pretty wild loose rocks and grass and some of the jumps on the XCE, and half hour later we're racing. So and Nigel a couple of the mechanics are ex-pro racers, whether it or pretty much almost pro level racers. So yeah, there's always a bit of, we're around competition so much of the year, so there's definitely people trying too hard. Perhaps myself on the first turn, on the first run.
The sequence of you is just the look on your face is that's the beauty of photographs. The thousand words could be said. I was like, oh no, he went down. Not good.
Yeah. I mean, the pros know with slalom, you should get progressively faster as the round goes, and the riding gets more competitive, and that raises your riding skills, and naturally you just ride. But I forgot about that, and I went as fast and hard as I could go into the first turn without even thinking that my front wheel wouldn't track, which it didn't in the least bit. And I hit the deck and didn't want to let go because I was for sure thought I would save it. And that was that. I went back to taking photos after 5 seconds.
How was the moonshine, diesel, grog, whatever you want to call it, at the finish line? That stuff. Stuff did not look very good.
No, they brought this jug of plastic container and with some paper cups, and they said, we can't use plastic cups because it'll melt the cups. And first thing, last year when I organized the race, we got a bunch of beers and we had a pound of beers. And I was concerned that we'd run out of shots before the race was over. But that was not going to run out. It's the strongest, vilest thing I've ever drank, and thankfully it didn't advance through any heats, because otherwise I don't know how Nigel did it, but and we were warned that no one was allowed to smoke a cigarette within an hour of drinking. And the guy said, he said you would explode probably from the inside.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's cool to see you guys. We know how much work you and the rest of the photographers and mechanics and everybody put in at each and every round. And it's, you guys show up, you go to work, and then the race is over, and you guys are, packing up and moving on to the next venue. But cool to see you guys kind of have some time in the spotlight and have some fun and race and just have a good time with the rest of the people that are all making everything possible there at each and every round that you guys are going to. So very, very cool, I think.
Yeah, next year is World Champs, so it's going to be even more competitive because it's going to be the World Championships staff race. So I'm not sure what format of discipline or trail we'll do. Maybe we'll do it one of the longer enduro downhill trails, or maybe we'll make it slalom again, or maybe we'll just make it full on downhill. So definitely. I think everyone's looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, I think the stage has set. So, yeah, I mean, Norway next year Worlds, obviously one more round to go coming this weekend. We got Leo Gang, kind of the book has been set, lots to play for this weekend. And any parting thoughts on your behalf here? We'll let you go for the evening.
For Leo Gang or Norway, or, no,
just
or what
you... Just in general, I mean, anything else you want to add to the conversation, or...?
Just, you know, it's only six rounds this year, and maybe, you know, maybe the end result would be different if we had seven or eight rounds, as I feel we need, you know. We started the season so late, and, you know, 4 months of racing is not, to me, that's not a year or a season of racing. That seems like a holiday of racing, and I think the level of the sport is where it is at in terms of professionalism and being sort of strong enough to support a bigger series, at least within the industry and within the race teams. You know, we just need people like the Norwegian race organizers is essentially a bike club, which you know, the Hafjell bike club, which got together and they wanted to have an event there. And they made it happen, you know. They brought in all the rest of things to make it happen. Whereas, you know, in North America, it seems like a race promoter wants to make it happen as a successful business venture. So I think, you know, those are the wrong reasons. So if we get more people wanting to host an event, and, you know, then an 8-9 race series, you know, can be a viable thing. And I think that's really my only thought, you know. It sucks to see such a tight series decided on over only six races. Next year, seven, and we go South Africa and then Australia. So that's two. And then we've got another new venue as well. So that's, looking forward to that already. But definitely also looking forward to getting back to New Zealand and having my own summer.
Yeah, your own time to hang out. And I know, I'm sure Anka can't wait to get back in the veggie garden and start obviously exploring, and with and then you guys got your tour group that you're doing and everything. So lots to go on later this fall. So, but what we'll do is we'll let you go here for this evening, and we'll catch up with you in a few days' time. Unlike a lot of the other rounds where we've had a bit of time off between them, we're straight back at her in a couple of days here.
Yeah, so we'll be discussing the. Celebrating the World Cup overall in pretty much 6 days' time. So yeah, don't know how to call it right now, because both G and Steve are I'm going to say they're pretty level matched for this. Steve said there's a chance he might race his South African Worlds bike, depending on the state of the track and the weather conditions. So you know, that'll make it interesting. You know, Blenky and Loic both showed that those 27.5 bikes are definitely can work not just on tracks like Peter Maritzburg, but are definitely capable on proper tracks like Norway. So I think next year we'll see a lot more of bike options for downhillers as well, obviously, with how things have been evolving. I think I don't know. I know G and Steve both very well, and their strengths and weaknesses. At this stage, I wouldn't be able to predict the winner for Leo Gang.
Yeah, they seem very, very. Both of them have a lot of confidence, and both of them have the skill and strength. So, I'm already excited for the race, and it's only Monday here, so we still got some more time before the end of the week. And I'm excited to chat to you next week, and we'll get you back on again and get the inside scoop here for the off track show. So, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us as always, and we're gonna. Mosey on to our next guest here. We got Bryn Atkinson on to catch up with him and see how he's doing with his recovery, and what kind of things him and Jill have planned for in the future with their team. So lots to going on.
One last thing, depending on who wins World Cup finals, because it's pretty ironic that these two guys are also both entered or invited to Red Bull Rampage. So, I mean, you got the world's best downhill races, but both could potentially win an event like the Red Bull Rampage. So it's good to see that kind of rider up at the top of a sport, you know. Just goes to show it's not just a trained athlete, it's a real all-rounded skilled bike rider. Maybe they can have a real decider at Rampage.
I think that would be pretty amazing. I mean, that's so much to think about, so much to go on. So,
All right, Justin, thanks.
Sweet, Sven. Well, thanks very much, man. We'll catch up with you later in the week. All the best in your travels there over to Leogang, and we'll talk to you later on.
Schnitzels and beer.
Schnitzels and beer. Have a good one. Thanks.
Always a pleasure having Sven on here for each and every one of these off-track shows presented by Bike Mag, of course, bikemag.com. We wouldn't be here doing these and recapping each and every round here. And, of course, getting Sven and all of our amazing guests on. So very insightful. And I think the tables have been really set for this final round in Leogang. It's definitely going to be a bit of a nail biter. I think, whoever deserves to win, or whoever does win at the end of the day, deserves to win. And like Sven was saying, though, it's hard. Six rounds just doesn't feel like long enough, especially with a shortened season. It only being 4 months, be awesome to, I think next time I'll have to ask Sven exactly, what his thoughts are in terms of, the professional working environment. 4 months, it must be a little bit nicer than, taking a 7 round series and stretching it out over 6 months. So, very interesting, and lots of excitement to come for next year with a bit of a couple new tracks and everything. So, but let's go straight into our next guest. He's down in the United States of America. He's coming from Seattle, Washington. We've got Bryn Atkinson, formerly from Australia. Bryn, how are things doing? You're on the mend down there, and you're just about to head out, tomorrow to that thing they like to call Interbike, where everybody loves to go but doesn't like to go.
Yeah, man, it's a long week, eh? But it's been good, dude. It's been like almost at 4 weeks now since I broke my collarbone. So I had surgery on that thing, and then just been recovering since then. You know, just the regular, massage, acupuncture, chiropractic, PT. You know, all those things. Just kind of get back to full recovery. So, and just sort of working on our plans and things like that for next year. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, let's get into it right away here. Injuries, not something that, it's inevitable in the sport, and something that hasn't been very kind on you recently. How are you doing? I mean, it seems like you're just kind of starting to get momentum again, and then, a silly little crash at Crankworks. Just doing some filming, is that correct, on one of the days off?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a silly little crash, though. It was pretty mega.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
I was filming with the dirt, with the Parkin brothers for, like, dirt. And, I really enjoy filming with those guys. They always, put together, like, a great edit. So I'll pretty much do anything for them, So I was just kind of, I hadn't actually jumped this. This is like a tabletop thing that a bunch of people had done before, it's nothing like out of the ordinary or anything, but it's up on Freight Train. And
oh, the quad.
Yeah, we got to that point, like we came from the top and we got to there and I hadn't done it before. And I was like, yeah, I'll just do it, And I came into it and like over jumped the tabletop before it.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, it kind of put me in a little bit of a rush state, and it's not good when you're doing a fresh gap, well, fresh for me. I think I cleared it fine. I just landed like on the edge because it kind of kinks a little bit to the left.
Yeah.
And I just landed on the edge, man. It was like soft and just sort of stopped my bike instantly. And you're like hauling ass right there. And
yeah.
And just sort of landed on my shoulder, and yeah, that's
dang.
It.
Dang, I didn't realize it was on the quad there. I just had heard that. Obviously, I chatted to your other half there, Jill, and she said that you had a crash up in Garbo, and because it was Crankworks, it was a mile a minute with everything. I didn't realize it was on the quad because that thing's a jump's a beast. I know for myself living up here, I've looked at it, I've thought about it many times, and. For me, I'm like, I gotta go to work the next day. That's not for me today. Not for me today. So yeah, little mishap, and like you're saying, you're down hanging out, doing all the physio and stuff, and trying to get better. And obviously, broken leg last year, and just kind of a string of two years ago.
But no injuries last year.
No injuries last year. Just a string
just
of.
Just to clean it up, just that just that we're all on the same page.
Fair enough. So you're, what reason why I really wanted to have you on? You've been around a long time. You've kind of wondered, it's like, how do I approach chatting to Bryn here, because you've
you're still at the top of your game. You're one of the, you know, not there is a lot of young kids on the scene nowadays, but at one point or another, you were that young kid. You were back in the day riding for the Royal Orange team, and then of course the probably most famous team of them all back in the day, the Mad Catz Iron Horse team, where it's you and Sam Hill and Rennie and Graves. I mean, maybe let's step back in the time machine, and I mean that's quite a cast of characters that you were teammates with at a young age.
Yeah, you know, I had that first year on Royal Orange, and I was really fortunate to have that opportunity. You know, I was just like a kid from Townsville, North Queensland, and I lived in Cairns for a couple of years, and I was living with Glenn Jacobs. He was he's one of the trail builders out there from World Trail in Australia. He's a good friend of mine, and he kind of linked up a deal through maybe like Stick and Dave Merton at the time. Dave was the team manager, and I don't know, those guys all talked, and you know, I got a deal with Dave to come over in 2002 and race like my first international season. So I did most of the Norbers, I believe, and like I didn't do Seattle, but I did most of the Norbers and stuff. And so then like just like me and Jared Graves were actually traveling together, and so like Sean Heindel, the team manager for Iron Horse at the time, he was Jared's team manager, and we became friends, and then it just sort of went from there, and we talked, and then I rode for him the next year, and just kind of crazy year, you know, of high caliber riders, you know, and kind of all different sorts of characters. You know, you got Rennie, who's like, you know, super wild, and at that point he kind of had a little bit of a drinking problem. Not that he still doesn't. I'm just saying, you know. But then we got Jared, you know, me and Jared would just freaking ride all day long, you know, and you know, Jared was a little more, I don't know, he was a little more I don't know, serious than me, I would say. Not yeah. that I wasn't serious, but you know, he was probably a little more focused at that point. And yeah. You know, like for instance, like, you know, we wanted to go see Vegas Supercross, and you know, Jared didn't want to come because he, you know, wanted to ride or something. We were just like, what? You know, you're going to Vegas, dude. You know, it's like you're crazy. So yeah, but it was cool, like pretty cool dynamic for the team. You know, a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, and I learned a lot that year as far as riding. So it was cool.
Yeah, I mean it's just crazy to think back, like just such a crazy group of people that were together. They're still, you know, racing and riding on different levels throughout the world, and obviously Jared. It's still, we chat about him all the time on the podcast here, just what that guy has accomplished, is accomplishing, and probably is going to continue accomplishing in the future. I mean,
yeah, man, he's amazing.
It's mind-blowing.
Awesome. And all with one kidney too, right? Like that year, 2003, he was, you know, doing the World Cups, and he was at the first World Cup in Scotland, and he crashed like at the end of the day, like sixth or seventh run of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and that was when he like, lost his kidney. So
holy smokes.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
It's I'm not afraid to say it on the show here, I wasn't really into riding a ton back then. That was not my forte. I remember, I mean, when I first kind of came into what downhill racing was, it was Clay Porter's Hypnosis, and that's where like for me, seeing you as a rider, like, you know, it just stood out in my head. I mean, you're on GT at that point, and just how you were, you know, flicking it through the jumps, and yeah, the whole Norba series. I mean, I know, I think it was on DVD, but I'm pretty sure I wore out the DVD watching that video nonstop, and just like, seeing you and Graves and Rennie and all those guys. I mean, it just seems like such a cool period in racing within, especially within North America.
Yeah, and like the Earth videos too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Those ones as well, you know, in the international scene. It's interesting to see how, you know, racing is probably bigger and better than ever, but there's just no videos for it anymore, and just how it's I guess the consumer's changed, and just how readily available footage is on the internet. It's
just a lot more focused, you know.
Yeah,
like I mean, that's the difference, really, you know. just the focus of it, like with everyone who's going to those events, you know, and the time, and I mean, everything has been elevated, you know, the bikes obviously are, you know, kids are starting out on basically the same bike that, you know, a top pro has, you know, so they've got the great tires and suspension, and there's really not too much difference other than, you know, some tunes of the shock and the, you know, the suspension. And yeah, it's like having them start on that, that's, I mean, it's only going to get faster, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly it. And you and I were chatting beforehand. We're both, you know, massive supercross, motocross fans. And I mean, you nailed it on the head. Everything that's out there for mountain biking nowadays, other than a tune, which you can go get, you know, there's tons of companies that'll tune your suspension. You can buy everything off the shelf nowadays. And it's exactly the same things that, you know, for the most part, that you and Jill and everybody else are running out there. And it's crazy to see in the sport just how readily available it is. I guess you just have to have a pocketbook, or mom and dad have a card that lets you do that. I know for me, I was on a hardtail with no suspension for the longest time. That was the extent of my bike, my early experience. And
I started, my first race was like 96 or 95, and I was, you know, I was full rigid guy for a long time. Yeah.
And yeah, it's, you look at in the bike park now, and there's kids on these little shredder bikes, and you know, Jackson Goldstone and these kids, dude. And it's mind blowing what these kids are doing. You know, you go spin laps with these 8-year-old kids, and you know, yeah, you can pull away from them, but they're no slouches. You know, it blew my mind. I did a run with Jackson earlier this year, and kid was boosting every jump on A-line, probably bigger than I was, and I'm like, he's like 50 pounds soaking wet and a fraction of the size. So
yeah,
but yeah, kids nowadays. I
mean, yeah, totally.
You and I can sound old while we reminisce about that. So yeah, I mean, you were riding on the Mad Cats team, and then you're on GT for quite a few years there, doing that program, racing globally. And is that when you met Jill and you guys started hanging out a little bit more, or were you guys dating before that?
No, we started dating in like early 2004. Yeah. Like, I'd met her at the end of 2003 and then went home to Australia and then kind of came back, and we just kind of hit it off, you know. And so pretty much since 2004 we haven't been apart, you know, as far, and we've been really lucky, you know, like that next year, like in 2005 I signed with GT, and then the following year she signed with GT, you know. Yeah. So it was cool, man. We've been pretty lucky, you know. We've been traveling the world together, you know, staying in the same room and racing together for, man, like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years or something, you know. So
it's always cool to see that kind of thing. It's the same chatting, well, obviously we have Sven on all the time, and him and Anka, where they get to travel the world together to share the same experiences. It's not one person's at home while the other one's at work. Yeah. You know, at work they get to share so much together, and I think that's the coolest thing. Just chatting to you all the time and chatting to Jill is that you guys are, you know, traveling around, and just, you know, you're going to work, you ride bikes for a living, but you're sharing. You know, you get to see all these amazing places.
Yeah, man, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, as I said, we're super lucky, so I'm pretty stoked there.
Yeah, exactly. So you guys did GT for a bit, then you kicked around with your own program, you know, creating your own program, which is where you're currently at right now, riding on for Norco and Fox Suspension and everything else. I mean, take us maybe through the last couple of years. Big changes in terms of Jill jumping from, you know, from racing four cross to downhill only, and for yourself, you know, trying to keep up with these kids. How is the kind of current program, and you guys, where do you guys get to pick and choose? I mean, is it entirely every sponsor handpicked for what you guys want and what you guys see in the future?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, that first year we put our program together, it was kind of, you know, it was a little on the fly, you know. We rode for Transition for 2 years, and that was solid, you know. But then a lot of the sponsors that were with Transition, we kind of carried over into our own program in 2012 with Norco. And so, you know, since then we've just sort of been growing the program, and yeah, we absolutely pick, you know, what we want to ride. Otherwise, we kind of wouldn't be doing it, you know. It's got to be enjoyable. And another thing too is like the looks of the program too is something that, you know, we can tailor as well. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, eh? And you know, like as I said, like it's a building process too, you know. So I mean, we don't have, you know, the big truck or, you know, you know, a bunch of staff running around. You know, we have our mechanic, we have his sprinter in Europe and a sprinter over here in the US. But we kind of just have what we need in place, and yeah, it's worked out pretty good. The off season's kind of crazy. Like, it's super intense, you know. We do, you know, all the background work, you know, like, you know, it sounds not like much, but it is a lot, and it's like product orders and yeah, like talking with sponsors and working on, you know, what we're going to be doing next year and things like that. So, and yeah, so it's kind of crazy, but it's all, you know, at the end of the day, we get to ride mountain bikes for a job, you know, so that it's a lot of fun.
It's not bad. I mean, yeah, like you said, it's just as something as simple as planning for bikes next year. I mean, obviously it's not just, you know, hey, what's your dream? Let's pick it from your catalog. You guys are building bikes specific for, you know, your downhilling and XC and everything, and you know, making sure you have enough of spares and this and that, and obviously setting ups, because if you're in Europe so much, you got to make sure you have everything over there. You guys are, you're a team manager, you're a athlete, you're a trainer, you're a, you know, a partner, you're a, you know, graphic designer, a social media person.
Well, we put those people in place, you know, like we do a lot of those jobs, but then we also like outsource a lot of those jobs too. We have a guy in Seattle here who does like our logistics and travel and things like that. So some of the load's taken away, but we still have to do quite a lot. So
yeah, it's so cool, and I think you guys are very, very active within the social media. I think that's you guys contribute so much to the sponsors. That's where I see, you know, a lot of these kids now, they're like, give me a bike, I can ride it, but then as a sponsor, it's like, well, what are you getting out, you know, for them? What do they get out of it? And you guys are very involved from the ground up with them, so it's cool to see in that sense. I guess one thing I have for you, what does the future hold for you guys, or for you specifically? Are we going to see you back, you know, racing all the World Cup downhill next year? I got to ask, because everybody, you know, it's the hottest word out there. Are we going to see some enduros next year? Are you something you're going to play around with maybe, or just stick straight to the downhill for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things were up in the air until sort of just recently. But the plan is obviously to race downhill for a couple more years, and we'll do some enduros, you know, maybe local, and then, you know, there's a couple. I think maybe the Colorado round. I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't really see myself as an enduro guy, dude. I'm like 200 pounds, man. So. I'm you know, good going down and stuff like that, but I'm a good climber, but I'm not that good.
Yeah.
You know, so so the plan is to race downhill and sort of expand our team, really. So it's kind of exciting. We got some plans to expand the program, so yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool news to hear. I mean, so is this like bringing a junior rider under as a development thing, or are you guys going to try and sign somebody that's kind of established within the bike industry?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say too much right now, but it's you know, we want to bring on I want to bring on someone. We're actually going to try and bring on two riders, and probably not a junior, but, you know, someone who's like a, you know, first or second year elite maybe, or something like that. You know, we have a short list going of riders that kind of suit our criteria. And, I don't know. I see certain riders who I think could benefit from, you know, Jill and my experience. You know, so one of the craziest things about my career is like, I said, you know, like I came from Australia and blah, blah, blah. But I was so stubborn that I just learnt I wouldn't really listen to anyone. I just wanted to sort of learn it myself, you know? And,
yeah.
And, so, you know, there's a lot of shortcuts I can provide for, for a younger writer, you know? Yeah. So.
No, that's, I mean, that's super cool. And don't worry, nobody listens to this podcast anyway, so it's not like, you know, we're going to blow the top off here. But I think that's cool to see, and important to see within the industry is you guys, you know, it's almost you're investing back into the sport to, A, help out these younger riders, just to kind of give them a bit of direction. I mean, it's a big world, especially when some of these kids have a lot of raw talent, but... you know, maybe they're just not given the right direction. It's kind of like, okay, here's your plane ticket. Show up Thursday for track walk or Wednesday for track walk and racing. And it'd be cool. That's awesome to hear that you and Jill are going to try and take a couple guys under your wing and give them a bit of a helping hand and a head start to try and make that next step within the elite category.
Yeah, for sure.
And, I mean, I think it's something that doesn't probably happen enough within it. So. So in terms of getting back to you racing, so you're going to be racing again next year. You've done the Norbas, you've raced World Cups for so many years. I mean, what is your kind of current take on the state of downhill? And it's, you know, as much as it's the World Cup, it's pretty much primarily the European Cup with one or two North American stops. Are you happy with the way the races are structured nowadays and the gaps between them? And the locations, or what would you like to see change if there was ever change to happen?
Well, I mean, for sure, I would like to race in the US a lot more, or in North America at least, you know. Going to Europe, like, you know, three times a year and staying over there and stuff like that. I mean, it sounds nice and stuff, but when you've been doing it a long time, it's kind of not that sweet, you know.
Yeah.
Having to eat, you know, ham and cheese, you know, for 3 weeks in a row is kind of brutal. So I don't know. It's like, I mean, next year's schedule as far as locations is good. It's expensive, you know. We're going to Australia and South Africa, locations are you know, pretty good. At least there's there's going to be some diversity in the terrain and the tracks. Whether I know a lot of riders are sort of bummed about, like, whether it's technical enough next year or not, but I don't know. I kind of like it when the sport goes to, when we go to those faster tracks, you know. I think it looks better for the online feed.
Yep.
And just any video, really, it kind of just brings people into the sport, like intrigues them a little more, I think, because I don't know, when they see us riding down some, you know, I like riding steep terrain, man, don't get me wrong, and ripping a ton, you know, but it's like when they see us riding down some steep skinny trail that and we're going like, you know, walking pace, it's, yeah, like, why are they going so slow, you know? It's like, so I mean, I for sure am a supporter of the high speed tracks.
and that's, yeah, actually touching on it there with Australia. I mean, how excited are you to go home and race back home again?
Yeah, it's cool, man. Actually, I'm super stoked, Dad, because my brother is actually the head trail builder. He's building the track right now. So yeah, I'm pretty pumped, and I grew up from like Townsville, so it's like 3 hours south of Cairns.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hometown-esque, you know. So
yeah, I mean, that's as close as you'll get. I mean, it's cool to hear that. Yeah, your brother's working for Glenn, and you know, like, you've known Glenn for ages with World Trail, and it's a fresh track. I know, I was, you know, chatting to Ryan Delery, one of the other course builders, the other day, and you know, he's telling me, you got to save your pennies, you got to come down here for it, like, it's gonna be crazy, you know. So it's cool. I'm hoping, yeah, like, it's more of a high speed track. I think we saw it with Worlds, just how tight the racing was, and you know, I think it's a good portrayal of the sport, and it shows excitement, because yeah, you could see somebody doing this super technical track, but you just videos and footage.
I mean, it's sick us seeing that, but it's like the from the outside, people ride like technical terrain. Yeah. They just don't know how to relate to it, you know. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's people still think we're riding in Lycra and hardtails and neon colors, I think, for the most part. you tell somebody outside the sport and what we're up to, and they kind of scratch their heads, and then you laugh, you see all the motocross guys that are mainstream and they're all riding 29ers and Lycra, and you're like, why are these sponsors promoting mountain biking this way to these high profile athletes? We pretty much try and dress to look like motocrossers, and they try and dress to look like, you know, the furthest thing from us. So
yeah, that's pretty funny.
very different. So yeah, I mean, obviously different courses next year going around, I guess is that a huge thing in terms of you're so used to diet stuff and so things are so accessible, and then you go to Europe and it's just meat and cheese and
I adapt, right? Yeah. But I'm just saying, it's like, it's not ideal,
Yeah. Well,
when we do like four races in Europe, that, and then this is like a 6-round series, Yeah. So.
Well, we're spoiled on the West Coast, right? I mean, we go down to the fish dock and get fresh salmon or fresh halibut and veggies out of the back garden, So we have it pretty good here on the West Coast, so.
Totally.
That's pretty good. So I do have this is a question actually from a fan, and it's a bit of a loaded question. I like to ask, we ask, Chris Kovarik this question. I want to ask it to you. Obviously, we know the best bike out there right now is the Norco RM, because that's what you're on. But maybe you can tell us what one of your favorite bikes were throughout your years of racing, and maybe is it just a specific memory or a race that happened on it?
I that is a loaded question. Obviously, I think the Norco is the best thing out there, man. I love that thing.
Yeah.
But if we're talking, like back in the day.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun on that on that Iron Horse 2003 when it was the SGS team.
Yep.
We Sean Heimdall is actually he did something with cars. I can't remember what it was. Maybe panel beater or something like that.
Yep.
And so he had access to this workshop, and so we went down there one night after Jared suggested that we like cut the frames out and like move the shock. And so we went and all of us got like lower and slacker, that evening, So, and it actually kind of worked out. Like my bike, I was dragging that chain guide on the ground all the time, but yeah, it rode pretty good and it was a lot of fun. So
yeah. I mean,
it was kind of a bit of a Frankenstein bike too, so. Towards the end of the year, like Dave Weagle made us these links that were stiffer. They had like this little box in between the link arm.
Yeah.
And they actually like played a trick with everyone with Rennie's bike, and they like had some little cables going into it to make it look like it was something special, but it was just a stiffer link,
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's obviously we're not trying to make it a loaded question, but I mean, you've ridden so many bikes over the years, and yeah, there's just more or less like the story that goes along with it, and that's where I think a lot of listeners, a lot of the people that follow this, it's cool for them to just find out, what kind of bike was great. I know Chris was talking about the earlier intenses. I mean, that's all he's ever ridden.
Yeah.
Just like the specific year that he loved it, and this is why he loved the bike, and because there's, this race that he'd won and memories on it. So it's a question that I love to ask the people that have been racing for quite a while, because obviously the bike that they're always on currently is the best bike, and it's an exciting time, I think, within the sport right now, just like how advanced the bikes are and how light they're getting. I mean, is there such a thing as a too light of a downhill bike? Like, what's your take on the bike setup and the direction it's going right now?
I think getting down anything below like 36, I think is kind of a bit of a stretch, especially for a heavy rider like myself, I like that weight, to answer your question, I think that that people riding around with, 30-pound downhill bikes, that's crazy, man. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. The fact that Menard's world's bike was like 32 pounds, and That's scary. It's I couldn't imagine riding my trail bike. I think weighs 29 and a half, so it's pretty much the same weight. And riding that thing down the hill scares me enough as it is. And when you do bike park laps, it flies around a fair bit. So
you don't have the same suspension as him, though.
Yeah, very, very true. Very, very true. So, and yeah, I'm trying to think what else we want to touch on here. I'm just going through. We did have a few questions from some fans here. What else do we got? My question for you, because I know you follow Supercross. Who's your pick for 2014? Supercross West Coast.
Oh, Lights?
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. yeah, I haven't really thought about the Lights too much.
450 then.
450, man. I think it's going to be... I think, obviously, Villopoto is going to be strong, but I think... and Dungy too, but I think Tomac's probably going to be up in the mix.
Yeah.
Obviously, this, you know, how strong he was riding towards the end of the season too, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that 450 class is going to be crazy next year.
It's going to be, yeah, definitely going to be packing those guys.
Yeah.
One question here. What was your favorite race of all time? And why was it your kind of most memorable race?
Huh. Man, probably, I mean, there's been a lot of good tracks. I really enjoyed, again, I'm like fast track kind of guy, you know, yeah. But, man, I really liked those, the Norva tracks, like Durango and Vermont, dude, those tracks were so sick. Like
yeah.
Just full high speed, big hits, you know, you just like sliding sideways, you know, muddy, like just low cut grass, and just hitting like microwaves in the that are hidden underneath the grass, you know. And those tracks were so sick, you know. So yeah. Yeah, I got the World Cups are so beat, man.
Like, yeah.
It's just like the same track every year, you know. So that's why it's kind of fun next year. At least we get to go to Cairns and places like that too. So yeah.
No, I agree with you. Hypnosis was like the first race video I've ever watched, and those Norva tracks, yeah, Vermont and Snowshoe West Virginia, just like how fast they were and just rugged compared to now. I mean, everybody loves to throw out the term, it's a bike park track, or it's been bike parked, and you're kind of like, well, that's what riding is nowadays. It's accessible, you know, downhill mountain biking is so accessible because all these places are building bike parks. And, you know, obviously the first year the trail goes there, it's you know, like Andorra this year, it's rugged this year. And I'm sure next year, you know, everybody's going to be like, oh, it's bike parked.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a part of, you know, the evolution of it really, like they can't build, you know, bike parks with non-sustainable trails. So, I mean, that's what you get in the end, you know, is a trail that has drainage and berms.
Yeah, exactly, high speed. Any hints on what this Cairns course is going to look like next year? Obviously, with your brother behind the machine sculpting it, is he kind of giving you the inside scoop of what to expect come next year?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I rode the crap out of that track, man. When I lived there, dude, I did so many runs, so I know that terrain and everything like the back of my hand, you know. So. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen it though. And the last time I did see it was like overgrown, like the whole way down. So they got a lot of work to do. And the thing is, as well, is at the bottom they have like, it's actually quite a long flat section after like Ronning's ramp, which is just like this big G'd out sort of lip that you kind of jump and land flat.
Yeah.
But it's probably like, maybe it's like 15 seconds of pedaling straight out to the edge of the woods, maybe even 20, you know?
Okay.
I know that when they raced the Worlds there in 96, like it went across a bridge and then out into the field. And so it was like, it was crazy, man. It was like, it's a mega pedal, you know? But again, they were riding trail bikes back then, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the sport's changed so much. So my brother's like, he's got some ideas that are pretty exciting. I don't know whether I can sort of mention right now because it might spoil it.
No, keep it a secret.
But yeah, he's got, you know, he just started on the top switchbacks back in 96. They were all wooden berms.
Yeah.
So he's just sort of, there was nothing really that they could do with the steep hill that they have, and it's kind of like on this like spline too, you know. So they just kind of had to continue with the main track for the first, like, I don't know, the first probably 25 seconds or whatever. Yep. And that kind of opens up into some higher speed rocks and roots and things like that. So, but I mean, I tell you what, if it gets wet there, it's going to be chaos. Like, it's that same dirt as South Africa, you know, that red clay.
Yeah.
That just nothing penetrates. It's just like, forget about it, you know. Just, yeah, so it should be fun.
Are we gonna, is Reese gonna be behind the handlebars for the race next year? Is he, because we know he races a little bit, is he gonna, is his goal to build the track then race it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll be racing.
Oh,
yeah,
right on. Well,
yeah. I mean, he's like, yeah, just touching on my brother, like, he's, you know, such a good rider, and I think that's what makes him such a good trail builder too. You know, he has that, he has the touch and the machine, you know, to sculpt the dirt, but then, you know, he knows how to ride a bike. Like, he really knows how to ride a bike. Yeah. You know, I learned a lot off my younger brother over the years, and he's got to be like one of the top trail builders in the world. I'm going to go ahead and say that, because he's so sick on a bike, and he just has that, you know, that touch. So,
well, yeah, I think that's important. I mean, that's working for Glenn Jacobs. I mean, he's the best out there, I think, as far as what they're building, and being an elite level rider, and you have the, you know how to operate a machine. I mean, those are two very deadly things to put together when it comes to building the course. He knows exactly. I'm sure he's already scoping out some pretty cool things that most trail builders wouldn't even see when they're sculpting for some fresh single track. So
yeah, totally. And he's like, you know, another thing too, like, he's a great rider, but he's quite the linesman, you know. Like, yeah, we can go down a track and he'll see lines, you know, that other people won't, and, you know, that paired with all that other stuff, it just makes him into, you know, a trail building magician.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think we should maybe button this up, because I know we're chatting to you beforehand. You've been up, you're up quite a bit before the race even started this morning. I'm sure maybe doing some team manager duties, checking with Jill there, making sure she's doing all good. So you did that, and you got a big drive ahead of you to go to Las Vegas for Interbike. So.
It's
Bryn, I really want to thank you very much for coming on the Off Track show here and taking time. I'm glad we managed to line this up and get you part of it, and that you're on the mend, and you'll be when are you cleared to start riding again?
I think like October 1st, around there. I'm actually like doing some filming up at Stevens Pass, our local mountain out here in Washington, and like the second week of October. So,
cool.
Yeah, I better be ready to go.
Cool. Is that just for the bike park itself, or a little independent thing, another online edit video?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a little online edit video thing, but it's going to also be, you know, something to do with the mountain too. So, yeah, it's kind of just planning right now. So yeah,
sweet. I know your last online video there was awesome, just to watch you just shredding the, I think you're pretty spoiled what you guys have down there in the Pacific Northwest trail wise just shredding that perfect looking dirt. As much as the rainy season's coming in the fall here, I know it poured rain up here in Whistler today. I'm getting pretty excited to get out there and not have any dusty conditions, but just have that wet loam, you know, hold it open wide and let it slide mentality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just like, as I was saying before, it's like, yeah, it rains a lot here during the winter, but man, the dirt is so good, you know? So yeah, you're going out there getting super wet, but it's totally worth it. So.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, exactly, 100%. Well, we'll have to maybe meet up halfway at one point this winter or whatever. I'll come down there. You guys should come up to Squamish or whatever, North Van, and we'll get some riding in at some point or another when you're visiting the Norco factory.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man.
I mean, definitely. Thanks very much for taking the time to come on here. We wish you guys all the best, you and Jill, for with your guys' program, for the Norco program there, and going down to Vegas, and speedy recovery, and can't wait to see you back on a bike.
Yeah, man. Cheers, dude.
Thanks very much.
All our sponsors as well, man, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no worries.
Norco Bikes, Cramp Brothers, Fox, Shimano, Renthal, Maxxis, Bell Helmets, Sombrio, 510, E13, and Oakley. So, yeah, cheers to all those guys for, you know, making it all possible. The fact that we can even, you know, have this time to ride and train and you know, talk on radio shows like yours.
Yeah, I mean, those are the guys that make it happen at the end of the day. And it's, like I said, it's awesome to see what you guys have put together and you guys tailor pick to what works exactly for Jill and yourself and partnering with the best sponsors out there. We wish you guys all the best in the future and can't wait to see it every round next year and get you back up to full health and seeing Jill get on that podium, because it's inevitable. We know it's coming. We know it's coming. I get stoked when you put up pictures of her just shredding a corner, and it's just that classic four cross style her, and she's definitely one of the best looking chicks when it comes to that stuff. And it's the same, you know, when I see a picture of Graves, I'm like, yeah, those that four cross attack background. So Jill's a shredder.
Yeah, better, man. She's got, yeah, her form is, you know, I feel like it's a lot better than a lot of the chicks out there. So yeah, she's got that going for her, and the calendar is good for her next year too. So yeah, it's going to be a good one next year.
Exactly. Well, we wish you guys all the best, and thanks for taking the time to come on, and we'll chat with you later on this fall, maybe.
All right, cool. Cheers, mate.
Always great having a new guest on the show. People like Bryn Atkinson, such a good guy. He's been around for such a long period doing racing and still ultra competitive. So we wish him all the best of luck in the recovery and training over the winter here. And I can't wait to see him back out on track and mixing it up and slicing and dicing with these younger guys. So big thanks to both of our show guests today. Of course, Sven Martin, always loving to come on, and Bryn for taking the time to join us and all those guys. And of course, all you listeners at home, thanks for taking the time to tune in and check it out. So again, if you missed any of the shows, they're all online, they're all free. iTunes, check it out there. Just search us out, off_track pre-race show, and you can stay up to date with everything. Of course, thanks to our amazing show sponsor, bikemag.com. And as I said at the top of the hour, check us out on all of our forums, Twitter, Instagram, and email. Who knows, maybe one day we'll get one of those things called Facebook account, but until then, you'll have to Twitter us to stay in contact. So, only a few days off here, then the action will pick up right away again. We'll be going to Leo Gang, the final round of this year's 2013 UCI Downhill World Cup. And nobody's in the driver's seat. The points chase is up there. 17 points between Steve Smith and G. Atherton. So lots of exciting action to go on. Hopefully everybody will be tuning in live to check that out. Of course, we'll be doing our show next week. Still working on confirming a couple guests for that one. Of course, we'll have Mongo himself. Sven Martin will be joining us again. So for all of you guys at home, from us here at the Off Track Show, thanks very much for taking the time to listen. And we'll talk to you in a little week's time.